Thanks for joining us for another week of Take Two. This is Heidi Hatch with KUTV 2 News alongside Mara Carabello with the Exoro Group and Greg Hughes. Now,
Citizen Hughes.
That's right. Also a little bit of a lobbyist, a former speaker of the
House. I lobby for truth, justice, the American way. That's my client.
The basics. Yep. What do you do? Just like for people who are wondering what you do, like when you're not a speaker anymore.
Greg, for all of
like,
us.
What's like a normal Greg Hughes day like?
I'm not really sure. It's life by Braille. I had issues I was really passionate about when I was a public servant.
Yeah.
I'm really fond of like public safety. So when the Sheriff's Association asked if I would be interested in working with them, I didn't have a whole lot of else that's going on. I wasn't a public servant. I wasn't running for office, and I still love policy. So I'm working with them. Just issues like that. So I like to consult. I like to advocate for issues, like I said, that are important. Truth, justice, the American way, stuff like that.
Just the basics.
I just try to stay on the side of angels. That's where
up,
I try to
you
stay.
You brush your
right
teeth,
there.
You put on your wow. super
That's
tights
what
and
I
your
do,
cape.
You
yeah.
know? I just try to,
It's
you
a
know.
Lot of t-shirt yeah. front right there, just in your little bit.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah, that's what I do.
And Mara,
nice.
You're just a boss babe at the office.
boss babe. So only could Heidi call you that and not... You and have
no,
you laugh and
your
you know?
Projections. I'm I feel like tired.
I feel
of
like
them.
You
I could.
Do
oh,
it too.
Oh, you're saying I could call you the boss, babe. Yeah. I can call you that.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's your office.
Yeah,
with your staff.
Sure.
Okay, we'll try that.
Sure.
We'll see how far that gets
sure.
me.
They, you yeah. can do that because they'll yeah. judge you.
Yeah,
you know? That's the deal. There is that they will judge you.
You know, because they
will
know
give,
you.
Let's give a little shout out to the Exoro Group next year. 20th year. Can you believe that?
20th anniversary.
That
Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's a long time to keep a business running.
I know. It's surprising. It catches up to you.
Speaking of keeping businesses running, it's my 25th wedding anniversary, which is sort of Ooh. Like a business that I've been running for 25
yes.
years.
Congratulations.
I've kept my husband around that long. Thank you. So anyhow, that makes me sound old. This week was a heck of a snowstorm that has nothing to do with politics. I don't think Republican or Democratic prayers brought more. But did you guys get hit hard at your houses? Yes, yes.
I did.
How much? Inches.
I had a foot. I had
Ooh,
a foot
yeah.
and I have a snowblower that apparently is just decoration in my garage. I thought it would actually work, but it didn't.
It's oh, because it's heavy snow.
Well, it's not, it didn't even turn on. I don't know what, anyway, it just, it's not even an old snowblower, but it didn't work. But so I was the village idiot with the shovel, shoveling all that snow. It took me 3 straight hours. And
how do you feel?
I was really sore the day after. I went to bed at 8:30. That day, literally, I went to bed at 8:30. I was so
old at all.
Oh, everything hurt, and I was just so tired. I went to bed, but next day I came home. I'm fine. I'm
we right. were probably over a foot at our house, and it was so beautiful. And then I asked my lovely husband to do enough of a driveway that I could skedaddle out, and then I am just arriving back from Vegas about 2 hours ago.
Oh,
nice.
So he did send me pictures of. Very lovely shoveled walkways and herbs.
I took photographic evidence of the Herculean task that was in front of me, and once it was completed, I had to record
yeah.
it. It was
yeah, sure. You
got to
capture.
I'll bet you that was the biggest snowfall that we've had in
it's
our home.
It's been a long time, and it was heavy snow for, too. And I think that was the crazy part. It was just so wet and heavy.
Yeah.
Whoever built the house that we live in really loved pines, and I think they're Austrian pines. They're big and beautiful, but the snow was so heavy on them. They just like we could hear the trees moaning oh. and cracking. And my husband's been out there chopping those poor babies
Did
down.
Did you get some breakage?
Major breakage, and they all look like really ugly trees now. I'm so sad. So, anyhow, we need the water, so that's good. We can all shower next year after this snowstorm.
Yeah, so are we done with the drought? Is that it? Can we just say
yeah,
game over,
storm,
tap out?
Done.
That is a big one, though.
No.
No, we're not.
Well, I don't want more of those, so I'll take the drought.
We're done.
I'm in the drought then. That's about as much as I want.
Because snow. That was hard to shovel?
Yeah, 3 hours. And
How
I went
about
to bed
if we
at 8:30.
Help you
I don't want to go to bed at 8:30.
The shoveling, and then we well, don't have
Yeah,
drink.
I don't want to go to bed that early.
You
anymore.
Need your kids to help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the point of
it's,
having
it's, You know
kids
how there's Boston hard, there's Draper soft.
Draper
you know,
soft.
So, you know, it's, these kids
I feel
don't
like
know.
This is a
they've never known
problem.
A hard day. I know, yes. it probably is, but I only got one at home now, and he's, anyway, he's. He's running the place, I guess, because
okay.
he didn't help me.
I feel your pain.
Yeah.
This week also, I didn't have this on the issues list planning to talk about it, but I feel like we're forced to. This week has been an insane week at our kids' schools, not because it's the last week of school before the Christmas and holiday break, But we started off the week with threats in Utah County, I think as far as San Juan County, in the Jordan District, in Salt Lake County. And it's kind of happened all week long where there's been new threats, not necessarily a gun found at school, but some kind of threat on Snapchat or something happening. And now, all of a sudden, at East High School today, after we had all of these, I guess we should backtrack, a bunch of districts sent out emails last night saying that there were some online threats and some, I think it's more of a national problem right now than just a Utah problem, where there's threats, and I think maybe the threats made, let's say, in Ohio or Alabama, and then they share the initials of a school, and there's those initials in about every state, and then it gets shared on Snapchat. And the problem is they have to investigate all of these, because how do you know which ones are real and what are not? And I think we're getting to the point this week where it's like, kids, please stop making these false threats. But at East High School today, we had a student actually show up with a gun in their backpack. Earlier in the week, there was a West High School student who actually had a gun in a bathroom there, posted on Snapchat. So the thing is we're all getting sick of these threats. Kids just want to go to school and learn, but you can't not take these seriously. So, Greg, what do we do about this? Because this is like the new world problem.
It is, and I'll tell you, the school district that my son attends, the school he attends, our school district contacted us. My wife told me last night that we got this email that they were going to enhance security or police presence because there's been a lot of this chatter that you just described. I was hoping and I thought that it would just be just that kids were just kind of ginning that up and watching adults react. No, that we had an incident today, as you described. And look, if you think about it, a seventh grader in school today, the last year they had a normal school year was when they were in fourth grade. If you think about the years that have been interrupted because of COVID.
Yeah.
We're hearing about disciplinary problems that are unprecedented right now in our schools as students are trying to get back and they're trying to get back to some normal delivery of education. We know proficiency's down. We know that there's consequences to the way that our children have attempted to or have been remote learning or going to school sporadically at times. And I think it's all playing out. I don't condone it. I'm just trying to get my head around it. And that's all this is an explanation. But I don't think our kids, given a three school years of an interrupted school experience, I think there's just problems. There's more unruly behavior. There's more threats. There are more problems. And I don't think that's going to go away. I think that we have to be cognizant of it, and we have to understand and maybe take better inventory of what's happened to our young ones since this whole COVID nightmare began. And I think that I think we're going to see this. I think it's going to be years coming.
Do you think they're connected?
I do. Before this, even the talk of violence in schools, I've spoken to parents who've in different school districts where they were getting letters from principals, things saying, "We had more incidences this month than we had collectively a year ago, and we're just seeing a lot of bad behavior that we haven't seen before." But then it was pointed out, some of these kids in seventh grade, or I don't want to pick on seventh graders, but whatever grade they're in, think about the last year, 2019, the 18-19, would it have been the 18-19 or the 19-20 school year, whatever it was, it was 3 years ago. And I'm telling you that's having its impact, its detrimental impact.
So what's going to change it, Mara? Do we need to start checking our kids' backpacks before they go to school, check their phones after they go to bed at night? I mean, nobody wants to live in a police state, but we all obviously think our kids are not the problem, but somebody's kids are the problem. So
yeah,
where do we start?
I think it's as easy and as hard as talking to them more, right?
Yeah.
And you know, this is an old adage that sort of separate whether your kid is good or bad from just hearing them, checking them, listening to them. Like, we don't need to label them, but it is a time where, as Greg is suggesting, good kids, people who are handling things, people who have all these really good adjectives associated with them, are also really stressed right now and maybe having some mental health issues. And I think it is nice to normalize mental health and to normalize that our kids may be scared, worried, or hurt. I think what's really important at times like this is if we want to talk about problems and stress points, I think what's just the most critical with kids is you talk about solutions. You never talk about a problem with a kid in which you don't present a way to empower themselves. But a big part of empowering kids is talking about it and not assuming that your kid is good or bad because they're stressed about something. And not assuming that your kid's always okay because they tell you they're okay.
Yeah.
And to Greg's point, this has been a crazy couple of years for all of us. And in a world that sometimes insists that we're all okay and insists that we're all perfect, and you add social media into the spectrum of perfect, and your kids can be getting good grades and be stressed. Your kids could have a great friend group and be stressed. And so I think it's as easy and as difficult. It's hard to bring up hard issues with kids. And so I think what it is hear them talking about it and hear you talking about it, but the talking about it is moving through and saying, gosh, you know, I get stressed sometimes or I get scared sometimes. And if your friends are doing this, you got to tell me, because we've got to move away from the equation that's about good, bad, blame, not blame, and more into understanding, awareness, and some vigilance actually right now is needed. And that's the scary part, is that kids have to be a little more vigilant, I think, certainly than when I was a kid.
And the good news is that kids are reporting these problems on the Safe UT app, but social media, while it brings so many good things to our lives, I think it amplifies the problems. Because I think if we look back to when we were kids in school, it certainly wasn't happening at this rate, but I went to West Jordan Middle School and it had a pool. And I remember when kids just got sick of swimming, somebody would go call on the payphone in the lobby and call in a bomb threat, so they would go search the pool. I don't know why that was the thing they would call in, because I would assume you could see that in the bottom of the water to get you out of swimming or whatever. So kids have always tried stupid things like that. But the thing is we live in a world now where we know that violence does happen in our schools, and so we have to take it seriously, which means we have to talk to our kids and be serious about it.
Let's move on to these adults that I saw a report that on Snapchat, these mob, what do you call them, the flash mobs that are raiding stores, breaking the windows, stealing. They're organizing those through Snapchat. Apparently, when you communicate there, it'll erase the messages within 30 minutes or something. And so they're finding that the way so many people are congregating around a Nordstrom's or some retail outlet or places, that they're using Snapchat to organize those, and then they're attacked. So it's our youth, it's our kids, but it's society. I think we're in a tough time right now.
Humans, I feel like we're going through a cycle. We're at the bottom of the barrel. We need to get ourselves out of this.
Seriously, I mean, come on.
I know. Speaking of people who are saying, come on, I'm guessing that President Biden's in the White House saying that right now, because the Build Back Better plan, I think he was really hoping that he'd have, I don't know if he was hoping he'd have something on his desk or something by Christmas, but Mara, it's not happening right now. Mitt Romney, I think, has been kind of one to broker deals, but he's stressed and not happy about it, because he's saying that Democrats are not even willing to negotiate or look at some of the child incentives or plans that maybe Republicans are willing to look at. Is this something that can get accomplished and both sides are going to talk, or is this going to have to be Democrats saying my way or the highway to pass this?
Well, I mean, I think Democrats have already said my way or the highway, but then that darn Manchin fellow is making it really hard. So
tricky.
I think they're not even able to have the, you know, highway right now because they can't get out of their own caucus. But, you know, I still think there's a chance in January, but I don't think there's any political person who thinks the door just gets really shut, not tight yet in January, but that it's going to be very hard to do it. What's interesting is that it appears as though one of the sticking points in the negotiations is the tax credit, the child tax credit, which is so fascinating because in public, Republicans and Democrats to a certain degree are all for it. So that's an interesting trick, that seems to be the rumored hang up, and yet no one will own it because it's not popular to own that in public. But I think for most players, you can't help but say Biden hasn't given up. Biden, there's a chance in January, but it's significantly smaller when you move
to January.
I'll
be interested to see if the child tax credit's as popular after people file their taxes, because for most Americans, you're getting that money up front, as I understand it. Yeah. So when you go to file, instead of getting that money that you can, you know, claims you're not paying as much at the end of the year, you're going to owe more. So I think some people are going to think that they're richer than they are, and then all of a sudden they're going to owe the federal government money. I don't know how that's going to work out. Greg, do you see a way forward where we can agree on a Build Back Better plan where it's super powered, medium size, small size?
I don't. But I'm going to take a different tack. Now, I'm not going to talk about this from the perspective of a conservative or from a Republican, but I'm going to talk about this from the perspective of having been a public servant and been Speaker of the House. I fundamentally do not know how anyone, why it escapes members of Congress that all public policy is about math. It's about addition. You have to get the numbers. I do not understand a party that says, and maybe and this, I probably will sound partisan here, but if you are at a 50-50 split in the Senate, how can you be so strident? You have to know. There has to be something inherent that perfect cannot be the enemy of good. If you want to get something, if you want to move the needle and you want something better than what you think the status quo is providing, you've got to work with who is there. Does anybody not understand why Senator Manchin is voting against these things? He's in a state, West Virginia, that voted overwhelmingly for President Trump. It's a conservative or more right of center constituency that he represents and that he as a senator is going to represent. And if AOC or Chuck Schumer or whoever it is cannot, Bernie Sanders, if they can't comprehend why Senator Manchin is approaching this the way he is, I don't know that they understand the legislative branch, because, you know, it might be a supermajority of Republicans in Utah, but I'm telling you, a West Valley Republican in the House, State House, and a King County Republican in the State House have very different constituencies and very different priorities. And so really the process of public policy is addition, and you have got to find that common ground. This always seems front-loaded with very, very aggressive agendas that almost by pressure, almost by surrounding the senator's car in a parking lot and protesting him and trying to shame him into the vote. I don't know what they're doing. I really don't. And if the split was the other way and Republicans had a 50-50 split and the vice president was a Republican to break it, and they were just trying to go all or nothing, I would scoff just as loud. I promise you I would.
I don't think they are. I mean, I think what you're seeing is how close they are to a deal. I mean, and that doesn't mean they'll get to a deal.
Yeah.
But they're down. I mean, I think both sides would say it's not like the cuts. Remember where we started, right? We started with an insane number.
Yep.
Now we're at a medium insane number. So they have
how easily we get used to these big numbers.
They have given already. I mean, I think it would be unfair to wholesale say they don't get the process. I think there is more diversity on the Democratic side. I think it's a bigger spectrum of positions.
The reason I think the window's closing quicker than they maybe appreciate is because inflation is, I think, hitting families and hitting our economy harder and faster than I think we anticipated. Look, if it's 5 to 10% of inflation, that's a 5 to 10% cut in your pay. If you're a family that's, you know, that works paycheck to paycheck, putting food on the table, paying a mortgage or a rent, these are real impacts to people. And printing more money or spending more money or the confidence that the public at large is going to have about larger and larger spending bills when they're feeling the pinch of inflation and other things, I don't know that the appetite's going to be as strong a week from now or a month from now than it is right now.
To watch, though, is President Biden.
Yeah.
Is consummate, because Senator Biden, I mean, that man, like him, dislike him, he knows the process so well. And a little, if there was a little pivot in the last 24 hours, it was sort of the question about, well, hey, what do you think you're going to do about voting rights, which is a separate issue, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you saw President Biden going, yeah, let's talk about that, you know? So I think you see him also pivoting to another power issue in the eyes of the Democrats.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think the interesting part, and this is what I always go back to, is I like the idea of a build back better plan, but the word build to me says that there might be building blocks of one block on another block on another block. I just can't wrap my head around it, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, when you get this many issues, because I think they're all important issues that deserve debate and conversation, but I feel like we're throwing so much at the American people and our senators all at once. It's hard to make a decision when somebody's trying to make you spend that much money on that many issues. Can you really understand all of them all at once?
I know we're taking too long on this topic, but just to give you an example of what you just said, child care. That is an intuitive issue. I mean, there are struggling single moms, there's struggling people where the child care, to have their child taken care of while they work, is a barrier. It's a barrier to employment. It's something that's terribly needed, and it can be that social safety net that we need. But when you get into this bill and you hear about how they want to structure the child care funding, there comes the federal requirements. There's so the facility has to be so large. You have to have college degrees. to be on site or one of the employees. The requirements that they put in place to qualify for that funding will increase for those that aren't getting it receiving it as a federal benefit. That cost will increase for everybody.
But Heidi,
you
bring up what is interesting and broken on both sides.
That needs to be talked about.
Habit of omnibusing, which has been going on for decades from both sides, that is in essence one of the fundamental problems with Congress. They've gotten out of the habit of debating individual issues. This is an indictment on everybody there.
Yeah, I agree.
And on individual, and I know there's the politic of not doing it too.
Yeah.
But the policy has gotten away, and now by both sides, this strategy is an omnibus and sort of too much to handle, too long, too detailed.
Yeah.
And it is what's fundamentally flawed at the federal level that actually doesn't happen at the state and local levels.
Yeah. Right. And I'm sure it's cool to walk away from your presidency and have this giant legacy bill of big change. I mean, I think the biggest change was probably Obamacare, and looking back to President Obama's presidency, that was a pretty massive overhaul. And I think every president probably wants something like that. They can say they did, but should we be doing something that large when we really can't understand the issues is part of the problem. So I hope that they break it down. I don't think they will, but I think speaking about one issue at a time is a great way to really understand how they're working. One issue I want to talk about that's local in Utah. The Human Rights Campaign ranks cities in overall right now. Utah is failing in one category, and this is for LGBTQ plus, not just rights, but how cities and counties deal with them. And interestingly enough, I didn't think you could get 100% score in anything these days. But Greg, I'll let you go first on this. When Salt Lake City was celebrating a 100 score from the Human Rights Campaign and the Equality Federation. Now, Utah as a whole didn't do as well. West Jordan's a 36, Orem's a 22, Logan's a 48, Park City's up there at a 70. So Salt Lake City's doing something. What do you see Salt Lake City that's doing right? Because someone's noticing.
You've asked that question, Greg, in a very different way than I was prepared to answer.
Good.
What are they doing right?
We're not here with talking points, Greg.
Well, it's not talking points. It's just I'm just a truth teller. So
okay.
Now I have to think of what they're doing is right.
Where's your anger on this issue?
I have no anger. I just want to ask everybody the simple question: would you like to live in downtown Salt Lake City,
currently?
As opposed to the city you live in right now? I wouldn't. And I'll tell you what,
I don't see. No, I'm not going to let you bifurcate issues. The reason I don't want to live in downtown Salt Lake has nothing to do with the LGBTQ community.
No,
it might be the category failure of law enforcement and homelessness.
Crime and homelessness.
Let's stick with the topic of human
rights related to those experiencing homelessness?
Well, let me just give you a little bit about the Human Rights Campaign. It's a specific association that deals with the LGBTQ community. So that has to be the topic.
I think it's too myopic. And again, it goes back to my overall point. When you say the Human Rights Campaign, many people will think that humans of
so
whatever
you're objecting to this organization's name?
No, I'm just saying that I just find 100 to get 100% from the Human Rights Campaign as a city that's hitting it on all levels is deceiving in its title and its score.
So let me tell you why
I don't buy into it.
I think this was an interesting thing. So this index has been around for about 10 years. So this isn't the first time. I think they just did a better job talking about it this year. And the index has very specific, as all indexes do and as all rankings do, you can go and see what they're looking at to judge it by. And it's not sort of...
So you could look at the 10 points and make sure you're awesome at those 10 points.
Well, no, I mean, it's more that it is specific, Greg, but they list it. And I think one differentiation is what it's specifically evaluating is how well the city has done with laws, ordinances, policies, and rules that govern particularly the LGBTQ community. And one of the things I love about Utah is when we led the non-discrimination stuff that happened 2 and 3 years ago, this was really a cooperative effort. And I mean, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints should be given some credit for helping with this score, because this is about the laws and protections we've put into place specific. So it's specific to ordinance. It's not even about a way of life and quality of life. And it's not even about whether you'd want to live or not live in Salt Lake City. It's that has a municipality statutorily approached the LGBTQ community particularly and codified non-discrimination there. So I don't know a city who can't take over that hurdle, because those hurdles are really not about lifestyle. They're really about protection ordinances. And I will say that the coalition that helped Salt Lake get to this number was really broad and really diverse. And so I think we should be celebrating that because of its diversity.
My question is, you just mentioned the religious liberties, anti-discrimination legislation that was passed in 2015. The legislature, that was a state statute. Wouldn't that improve the scores?
I wasn't actually speaking the state statute. No, this is very specific to not judging states. It judges municipalities. And I was speaking to the precursor to that, which was done in Salt Lake City. Just should be clear, this is has nothing to do with judging states. This only judges
locals. It doesn't judge states, but my point there was that we created a state statute that everyone had to adhere to in terms of religious liberties or anti-discrimination. And so the tide should have lifted all boats, including all cities. And so I don't know. I don't know why there would be such disparate scores.
Maybe it did. Maybe Logan was even lower.
Because that was a good bill.
Yeah. Well, here's the interesting part that I thought, because, I mean, who would have thought when you're celebrating a mile mark like this for Salt Lake City that LGBTQIA plus would be something that we would be celebrating that we're doing a good job with, which shows me that if we can do a good job at that here in Utah where people wouldn't expect that, why can we not be doing a good job in these other areas that Greg mentions? It's really about what do you care about? What do you focus on? And so I think if we can give that same kind of focus and care in our communities to these other issues that are having problems, we can do hard things, right?
Amen.
We can do Amen. Hard
and
things.
And the stuff that's not working in Salt Lake, which I think there's more that's not working. Greg and I would agree. There's more that's not working in
Salt
Lake City.
That's pretty bad. You got a pretty bad situation if we're agreeing.
I'm only a Salt Laker, and I do think that results happen where your energy is.
Absolutely. I want to speak about a little political energy here, specifically in Utah right now. It's been a little while since Ben McAdams came out in support of Evan McMullen, who is running for U.S. Senate against Senator Mike Lee. He wrote an op-ed about it in the Deseret News. He's talked about it on Twitter. He does a lot of retweeting of Evan McMullen's issues. And while I think it's great for anyone to support whatever candidate they choose, you know, find a candidate you can support and back. The question here, and we were talking about this in our post podcast last week, you weren't here, Mara, but we were talking about, is this a good thing for the Democratic Party, or does it matter? Because I think there's some concern right now that maybe someone who, I think he's a big name in Utah, his Democratic circle, he was a congressman, he did a great job as Salt Lake County mayor on a lot of fronts. Now he's supporting independent, which independence I think is probably the middle ground where a lot of us are. But does it hurt the Democratic Party when you have one of your strongest Democrats not supporting a Democrat, which there is in this race?
Yeah. So, I mean, you guys can tell me if Brian King, the minority leader, disagreed with it because he is a Democrat. But I would tell you from my position that statistically, a Democrat statewide for federal seat, the Senate, is not viable. And so if I were someone who wanted an alternative to Republicans, which is what Evan McMullen presents, that I would argue you're better off getting Utahns in the habit of not voting for Republicans, even if they didn't make it all the way to the Democrats. So I would say that it's a smart thing for Ben McAdams to do. I don't think it hurts the Democratic Party. Now, if the Democratic Party had a viable candidate, we would be having a different discussion. But I think the action of not voting for the Republican at the end of the day would help the Democrats.
Is it all about gamesmanship then? Because if we look back to the gubernatorial race, a lot of Democrats changed their affiliation so they could vote in the closed primary because they wanted a voice in, because they knew the Republican was going to be the person who won ultimately, and they wanted a voice in that. Is that a great way to go about it in a state where you're run by one party?
So what I will tell you, and my friend Mr. Hughes disagrees with this point of view, I believe that the individual action of voting and the individual action of making up my own mind is so much more important than an arbitrary affiliation with a construct that is the party. And so I don't think party affiliation should be what drives you. I don't think you should be spoon-fed by a donkey or an elephant. I think you should make up your own mind and vote for who you want to vote for.
Don't tell Twitter this, and because everyone's so ingrained in their donkey
and elephantness. In the state of Utah, in order to fully speak your mind if you want to vote for a Republican, you have to change your party affiliation, because the Republicans here here are so afraid of competing in the marketplace.
That we just they have Republicans vote for the Republican nominee.
Make you join your brand because they don't think they can compete openly. So, yeah, I think you vote for who you want and you don't worry too much whether a party is happy with you or not.
Mm.
What you just heard is the white flag of the Democrat Party in Utah. There is no party. You don't have leaders that have been elected leaders in the Democrat Party who want to affiliate with or support a Democrat statewide for office. The Democrat Party in Utah is now a regional party. It's in Salt Lake City. It could be in Park City. It can be in Moab. But they've given it up because in the 2020 election, as you just pointed out, they said, if you want your vote to count, register as a Democrat. Change your party affiliation and register as a Republican. Now they're saying, and this is what Ben McAdams said, he said it's a futile effort. Or futile task to support a Democrat statewide in the U.S. Senate race. And the problem with that is...
Isn't this good, a state without parties? We can just
vote let's
for
be
people?
A one-party state. So I believe in a two-party.
Right, we are.
So this is what I believe. I believe that a two-party governance is important. I think that each party works hard to come up with a platform, and that platform is to articulate their general positions and how they see and how they would act if they were elected. And if we took Mara's... pragmatism to its nth degree, we would cease to have two parties. And I don't think that would promote more debate, more deliberation. Think about the race in New Jersey for governor that just happened. That's as blue of a blue state as you're going to find. The incumbent, Governor Paul Murphy, mm-hmm. on election night with 90% reported, he was winning by less than 1% to the Republican former state lawmaker. Now, if Republicans looked in New Jersey and said, well, look, Republicans are never going to win for governor. So why even try? Let's just all become Democrats and vote in the Democrat, vote for the Democrat. You don't build your Republican Party that way. New Jersey has a Republican Party. They are not ready to throw up the white flag. They're not giving up statewide races. They're not saying, well, we'll never win. And in this case, thank goodness there was a Republican that was running because the incumbent governor barely won, and you can see his tone and how he's speaking to the media. It has changed. He's saying, now, he used to be one of the most strident mandate enforcers of governors we have in America, and he just said, it was just a couple days ago, I think the people are getting tired of the restrictions and the mandates. And you can see his tone change because he nearly lost in an overwhelmingly blue state. That's because there were Republicans making the other case. Why Democrats don't think that their role in our election process in a November race is relevant, important, or can describe it better than futile, I'll never understand.
I should be really clear. Democrats do think that in Utah, and Greg knows Democrats think that in Utah. I don't represent the Democratic Party,
I'm not really coming after you, Mara.
No, you can come after me because I'm not afraid, but hold
it's
on,
ben
Greg,
I'm coming
I let
after.
You.
I'm coming
but,
after Ben
but
McAdams
I'm
on this.
Just saying,
Ben's the one that's,
I'm just
that's
saying
doing
on
his
this,
party a
you're,
disservice.
You're being really flowy with this because Republicans don't put time, energy, or effort in the state of Utah to Democratic seats, and we have Democratic seats, and you know we have Democratic seats.
You do, but they're
and
regional.
You spend
they're,
time.
All your Democrats in the House are from Salt Lake County.
You're talking
They're
about statewide, but you put no time and energy. So we were talking about a single position. I think the Democrats have a viable point of view. What we know from research is over and over, Utah's values align as well, if not better, with unaffiliated and Democratic candidates.
If you believe that, you would have a statewide candidate for office.
That's not true.
You would.
That's
not true. If you believe what you just said.
I do believe it. And Democrats have put up more value-driven candidates. And what we have is a label problem here. We don't have a party that doesn't represent people. We have people who have been indoctrinated, as you continue to do, that say a brand is more important than an idea. And my consensus is, no, ideas are more important. So when you hear someone who has an idea that you believe in or a value or a policy or a belief or an agenda, you should respond to that and not worry about what their party brand is. So I think parties matter. I think the Democrats will tell you the parties matter. I'm sure the Democratic Party, I can't imagine they're happy with Ben McAdams right now.
Yeah, the party chair, I think, recently said, Diane Lewis, now is the time to recruit and support good candidates statewide up and down our ballots. So,
and you know what, Mara, we're speaking out here in the cheap seats. We're commentators. But I'm talking about a former Democrat member of Congress in Ben McAdams, former mayor of Salt Lake County, largest county in the state, the mayor, Democrat mayor. And he's telling he called upon the Democrats to not bring forward a candidate for the United States Senate in the November race. I think that is just such a cop
commentary
out. I think
on
it's
how
a
bad
white
Mike
flag.
Lee is.
It's a white flag. I just think it's, look, if that's the way, why am I getting in the way? I mean, if you guys don't ever want to own a statewide candidate and you want to say that any Democrat running is a futile effort, who am I to say otherwise?
But I want to be clear. No one said any Democrat running is a futile effort. I mean, I appreciate the expansionism of it. No,
well,
he didn't.
Ben did said for
he
that
said,
race.
He said, in this race, this is how he would go. And,
it was the governor's race the cycle before that.
He has the complexity to choose the person and the agenda, which is why in Utah, if you want individualism and thinking, you should go left of center. If you want compliance and adherence, you should go right.
I do think it's a tricky thing.
I don't know how you can say that left of center Democrats don't vote for them because they have no chance of winning. I don't understand how
I
you
didn't
can
say, that.
Well,
we
say those two things.
I think it's got to be hard, though, as a Democratic candidate, because I think Chris Peterson was not thrilled with all the push for people to go and really back and figure out who they wanted to in the Republican Party, because he was like, hey, I'm here, I'm running, I have valid, you know, things I want to talk about, but people didn't really want to listen to him. So I think it's
yeah. How do you get a good candidate to run that will put real resources and time in if this pragmatism of, let's be honest, Democrats are never winning.
But that's not what's happening, Greg.
When Democrats don't want to be Democrats, that tells you what is going on.
You're about the party, and a lot of people are about the idea and the person. And the genesis of all of this is Mike Lee is an unacceptable representative of the state of Utah.
All right.
Sounds
we're
like
leave
you should
it
have
at
a
that
good Democrat that
week.
Should say should make that case.
I don't need a Democrat or a Republican. I need a candidate.
Okay, Mara
that
doesn't,
I can support.
And I accept that Mara doesn't. But I'm saying that the party and those that have represented have been elected under the banner of that party should be helping build their party. If they believe in the platform or they believe
in
the
ideas.
I'd like
to see a third and fourth party built, too, so we can have a bigger party, bigger tents.
That's
and
Evan
coalition.
A giant circus of humans running for office. I cannot wait for that. Well, thank you for discussing big issues. We're almost to the end of the year. I feel like we need a podcast to wrap up this exciting year that 2020 has been.
We should. We could never get through that many issues.
I know, right? It has been an issue-oriented year. Thank you for being with us this week. We will talk at you soon. Tell your friends about us and leave us a rating.